Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this morning's meeting of the Transit Commission. Again, we're holding this meeting electronically via Zoom. Before we proceed, Commissioner Williams has advised that she will not be able to participate in today's meeting. And I'll just do a roll call to make sure the rest of us are here. And remind everybody that we need 7 members to maintain a quorum. Okay, Councillor Suds.
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Gower.
Here.
Councillor Kavanaugh.
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Tierney.
Present.
Councillor McKinney.
Present.
Councillor Brockington.
Good morning.
Commissioner Caricato.
I'm here. Good morning.
Thank you. Commissioner Olson.
Yes, here.
Commissioner Williams, not Commissioner Wright Gilburn.
Good morning, I'm present.
Thank you. And Vice Chair Cluche.
Good morning, present.
Great. Okay, so as mentioned, we're again participating in the meeting via Zoom. Instructions for members of the public wishing to submit comments or participate as a delegation in this meeting were included in the agenda. Those who do not need to participate in the meeting can watch the live stream on the city's YouTube channel. For those who are participating in the meeting, please keep your microphones muted until I call on you to speak. I will provide each commission member with the opportunity to ask questions or comment in due course. Commission members will be called on first, followed by any members of council who have joined the meeting. At any point you may want to speak or that you want to speak, please use the raised hand Zoom function, which you will find by opening the attendees list using the Zoom controls at the bottom of your Zoom window near the audio controls. The committee coordinator and I will be watching for those clues. The usual 5-minute speaking limit will apply. Following up from the Special Transit Commission meeting of Wednesday, June 10th, where we adjourned the meeting while we were still in camera, advised by the city clerk and as noted in the motion to proceed in camera, I'll now rise and report at today's meeting. For those present, I would like to advise that the Transit Commission met in camera on June 10th, 2020 at 9 a.m. to receive an update on the tentative agreement with the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 279. No votes were taken other than to give direction to staff or to deal with procedural matters. The matter was referred to council for consideration at its meeting also on June 10, 2020, where a motion to ratify the collective agreement was approved in open session. And I'd like to congratulate David White for the negotiation team and, of course, our GM, John Manconi, and Clint Crabtree from ATU 279 for their work on that effort. All right, moving on to today's agenda. Are there any declarations of interest? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to the confirmation of minutes, and we have a couple here. So first, we have the minutes number 11 from the last regular meeting of the Transit Commission, which was held on February 19, 2020. Are these minutes carried?
Carried.
Thank you. Next, we have minutes 13 from the special transit meeting on Monday, June 1st, 2020. Are those minutes confirmed?
Carried.
Carried.
Thank you. The the in-camera minutes from our special meeting on June 10th will be confirmed at our next regular meeting because they're not quite ready yet. And just to let everybody know, there will be no minutes number 12 to confirm, as agenda 12 was the agenda for the March Transit Commission meeting, which was canceled after the agenda had been published. So response to inquiries, next under communications, we have inquiry 0120 as noted. If anyone wishes to lift this onto the agenda, you will have to approve that the rules of procedure be waived to add it. As such, it would be discussed as an additional item at the end of the agenda. Does anyone wish to lift the response to inquiry? Okay. Now, today we have no speakers registered for our agenda. But we do have one written comment from Jan Lam. And Mr. Manconi, I'm going to ask you if someone could connect with Mr. Lam about the points he's raised there. Would that be possible?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We know Mr. Lam well. He communicates with us regularly, and we'll have Mr. Scrimger follow up directly with him.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, so we'll now proceed through the agenda to see if there's any items we can carry on consent. Item one is the Confederation Line and bus service update. I'm going to make an assumption here that we want to hold that item. I'm also going to ask Mr. Manconi, when we come back to that item, if you could give us an update on the discussions with groups representing persons with disabilities on the use of masks. So we'll now go item two, general accounts, transit write-offs for 2019. Does anybody want to hold that item? Okay. The recommendation reads that the Transit Commission receive this report on the 2019 general accounts write-off of $880 as required by the Delegation Authority Bylaw 2019-280. So if no one wants to hold that, we can carry it. Received. I want to congratulate staff on that for having less than $1,000 of write-offs on multi-million dollar receivables. The 2020 operating and capital budget on Transit Commission status report. Draw your attention to that this is only for Q1, which includes the last 2 weeks of March. The next one, the Q2 update, will be available in September. But does anybody want to hold that?
Hold, please.
Hold, okay. Number four, capital adjustments and closing projects for the Transit Commission. The report notes that we would be returning $6 billion to reserves. And recommends Council 1, authorize the closing capital projects listed in Document 1. 2, approve the budget adjustments as detailed in Documents 2. 3, permit those projects in Document 3 that qualify for closure to remain open. And 4, approve the return to source or funding draw for the following funding balances and eliminate the debt authority resulting from the closing of projects and budget adjustments. A, transit capital supported reserve, $6,438,668. B, provincial gas tax, $2,078. Development charge reserve, $1,510,426. And finally, D, the debt authority of $123,719. Does anyone want to hold that item or is it carried?
Mr. Chair, Jean Cloutier here. I just have one small question with respect to item four on the reserve. May I ask it now? Sure. Just a question. We're projecting at the end of the year $5 million in operating reserves and $10.4 in capital reserves. Just wanted to know how that compares historically to the reserves in the last, let's say, 5 years. Is it higher or lower than our historical reserves?
Chair, I know the treasurer is here. If I don't have that answer, but if she does, she can certainly provide that. And if not, I know that we're bringing you obviously a financial corporate update later on this month to council, and certainly we can include that in that dialogue. But I will ask Ms. Stephenson if she wants to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Manconi. And Councillor, no, I don't have that direct answer, but I will get that for you and I will circle back and share it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So maybe we'll hear about it on the 24th at Council.
Yes. And what I would add is in terms of the capital close that you see here, this will be one of the pieces of the, I suggest, overall puzzle in terms of filling that gap. So we will be speaking to this at Council on June 24th.
Thank you, Madam Treasurer. Thank you, Mr. General Manager. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Wendy, could we ask you to circulate that report? Will the report go public before Council, or where I'm going with that is we need to make sure the citizen commissioners see it if it's going to council.
Absolutely. It's going to be a presentation to council on June 24th, but I'm more than happy to share that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the last item we have is a motion on which Commissioner Caricato gave notice at our meeting on June 1st. So item 5 will be the launch of the advertising of the Confederation Line. The recommendation reads that the Transit Commission direct the General Manager of Transportation Services to commence a procurement process consistent with the city's procurement policy to identify potential revenue opportunities from advertising in stations and inside train cars on O-Train Line 1, and that staff report the findings to the Transit Commission at the conclusion of the process, expected to be in Q4 2020. Does anybody wish to hold that item?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yes, please.
You want to hold it?
Okay. Chair, if I could just step in. Was item number 4 carried? I don't believe it was.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my apologies, Chris. So after Vice Chair Cloutier's questions, is everybody okay with carrying that item?
Carried.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to go back then to item number 1. Mr. Manconi, if...
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. We have two presentations for you. First, I'm going to ask Mr. Scrimger to give you an update on the Transit Recovery Plan, which has been going very well. And then Mr. Charter will give you an update on the Confederation Line in terms of how it's performing and where we are with the work that's been ongoing. I'll now turn it over to Mr. Scrimger. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thanks, John. Yes, we're going to give you an update today on how the Transit Service Recovery Plan is going. I'll turn to the next page, please, Chris, or whoever is running the button. So the update so far, all elements of the Service Recovery Plan, all of the health and safety measures have rolled out. Mandatory masks for customers and employees on all parts of the transit system began on Monday this week. Front door boarding on buses, boarding through all doors on trains have both been restored. As of noon yesterday, we had distributed just under 9,000 disposable masks to our customers, and we continue to do so. Our observation so far is more than 90%, in some cases more than 95% of customers are wearing masks. And we're starting to see slightly increased ridership, but certainly no significant issues of crowding at this point. I'd also like to mention here that we did meet with the chair of the Accessibility Advisory Committee and two members of that committee last week regarding the chair's comments that he'd made and other matters that were raised at the last commission meeting. They made some good suggestions to us, which we have incorporated into our communications campaign and other matters that we continue to look at as we go forward. So yes, Chris, thank you for going to page 3. There's some pictures. These two photos show the signage that's been installed, reminding all customers as they enter any station or any bus that a mask is required and that they should not enter if they're sick. The next slide, please. And here are two pictures, the one on the left of a hand sanitizer dispenser in an O-Train station, and on the right, a hand sanitizer dispenser in the bus part of the station. The next slide, please. And here's some pictures of customers wearing masks on the train already this week. Next, please. And here's a picture of one of our customer service O-Train ambassadors on the left and the supply they have of disposable masks at many stations ready to distribute to customers who need them. And here we are again with two more of our staff members ready to distribute masks. So the next steps going forward, we will continue to monitor the system closely. We'll continue to monitor that customers are wearing masks, that there are no problems with that, no issues arising. Still being sure that there's sufficient capacity to make sure there's no crowding on the buses. We remain ready to adjust our plan if required. If there are changes coming from the provincial level, the federal level, or from the medical officer of health, we're of course continuing to listen to all comments that we get back from customers, from counselors and commissioners. And our next major step in the recovery is the return to full service on all routes, except for the school routes, on Sunday, June 28th. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe I'll turn you over now directly to Mr. Charter.
Are you on mute, Troy?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. If we could just move to the next portion of the next presentation, that would be great. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Pat. All right. So if we could just move to the next slide, that would be great. Mr. Chair and members of the Transit Commission, as you're aware, RTG has provided the city with a plan that addresses the technical improvements required in order to improve the performance and reliability that has impacted both the service and ultimately our customers. One of OC Transpo's guiding principles for temporary service closures or other major infrastructure work for that matter is to consider, when possible, conducting such work in periods of low ridership due to, in order to minimize the impact on our customers. With the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, ridership levels in Ottawa and essentially across the world have significantly reduced. So as previously shared with Council, OC Transpo has been working with RTG to expedite the work associated with their rectification plan during this period of low ridership. To that end, multiple temporary service closures and the associated implementation of the R1 replacement bus service has been initiated. And as you know, there's another upcoming temporary closure scheduled for next week, starting on Sunday, June 21st, with a return to full service on Thursday, June 25th. These temporary service closures have allowed RTG to advance items on the rectification plan that require access to the full line and fleet, and that requires the use of specialized track equipment for extended periods of time. As a result, RTG has been able to expedite certain critical work that would not have otherwise been possible to achieve during our normal overnight service closures. In other words, the goal and the outcome of these temporary closures has been and remains to improve the service for our customers as quickly as possible. Can you move to the next slide, please? Thank you. During the temporary closures, work has been ongoing on the vehicles, the track infrastructure, as well as at stations. Work completed has been both a combination of seasonal activities, it's work that wouldn't necessarily require closure, but we're leveraging the time, such as station cleaning and various inspections, to the work associated with improving the performance and the reliability, the main reason for the closures. Work has included the ongoing testing of updated train control and communication software to improve the vehicle and system performance. And with this upcoming closure next week, the software, after it now have been validated, will be updated and implemented in all the equipment and vehicles. Additionally, extensive cleaning and inspection of the overhead catenary system across the entire alignment to remove the buildup of road chemicals and to replace any components such as parafills that are at risk of failure. You'll recall that both have been the cause of service disruptions during this past winter. Included in the inspections has been adjustments to the OCS or overhead catenary system to optimize the positioning of the wires to reduce the potential for arcing and to improve the performance of the vehicles. As well, various track work throughout the alignment has been conducted to correct settlement issues and to make adjustments to the rail for the summer, the high heat conditions that we will experience. Move to the next slide, please. Testing of switch heater alarms, which will be used in winter months, and will provide staff with advanced notification of potential switch heater issues that may affect their functionality and ultimately lead to a service affecting switch failure. That's being conducted as well. They have completed the injection grouting, which is intended to deal with some of the water infiltration that has been, in the downtown tunnel locations. Specifically, they've done work around Lion and Rideau Center stations. You will also recall that improvements to the train doors operations, the doors that our customers interact with, was dependent on updated door software going through a safety certification process. The safety certification process was called, or is called, SIL 2 certification, and it has now been received. And as such, all vehicles have been updated with this new software. The new software is now on and in service, is now on all in-service vehicles, and will result in less disruptions associated with doors, which has been one of our most frequent occurrences of system disruptions. Work has also continued on stage 2 vehicles, which has included the release of the 37th vehicle, and commissioning exercises, which essentially means running trains on the line, has also continued throughout this period. Additionally, with the reduced service levels combined with the temporary closures, vehicle retrofit modification work has continued and has provided RTG with increased vehicle or hands-on time, allowing for a variety of tests and adjustments to be conducted. Next slide, please. With regards to the upcoming temporary service closure this Sunday, as I mentioned, RTG will be implementing the new train control software on all vehicles and related equipment. Further adjustments and replacement of key components will be made to the OCS. For this closure, it will be specifically in the downtown tunnel section of the line. We're also continuing to focus RTG's efforts on conducting the vehicle modifications and the commissioning process to get Vehicle 38 into service. And lastly, there will be continued work on other elements of the track infrastructure along the entire line. This can include adjusting and replacing the ballast, which is the rock that holds the ties and rails in place, work on switches and switch heaters in all those elements. Next slide, please. So we know that vehicle reliability has been one of the major contributors to disruptions that have impacted our customers. The challenges continue. To that end, we are continuing to work with RTG on improving vehicle reliability and proactively track and trend emergency issues to ensure that it resolves quickly and action timely. As part of the rectification work, a further review is planned for the performance of the infrastructure. This review will provide oversight on the longer-term actions to resolve track conditions, including the noise, vibration, and temperature-related issues. I mean, there will always be, some adjustments that need to be made track as we change seasons. And in Ottawa, we do have some highly variable, from winter to summer, there is quite a bit of change. But, generally, we want to look at the track-related issues, the expansion of the track in the summer and the contraction of the track and rails in the winter. We'll also be conducting a final review of the OCS configuration, including a review of the integration with the vehicle pantograph. And if you recall, the pantograph is the portion of the train that makes contact with the OCS, the OCS wire that provides power to the train. And given that the LRT network is an integrated system, in that the trains, the infrastructure, the track, and all the related technical systems need to operate reliably together for overall system performance to improve, an overarching and holistic review of RTG's performance tracking and actions to resolve is being undertaken. As well, RTG has been advised that the city expects to implement 15 double car trains for morning peak service as of August 4th, 2020, the beginning of August. Next slide, please. Overall, while we still do not have a firm date for consistent reliable service, we've made it clear to RTG that it is the city's expectation that this be achieved by the end of August. There are many areas where improvement is required, and we need to see positive steps taken on all fronts. The temporary closures have allowed for RTG to expedite some critical work, but the work is far from complete. RTG has not agreed to a firm date for reliable service. However, they have agreed that 15 double car trains are to be in service at the beginning of August. Obviously, it goes without saying that we expect to see a reliable 15 trains in service, and the ability of RTG to sustain 15 trains every weekday of service. And then just lastly, one final note. As RTG works towards completing the work associated with their plans and the technical improvements, there may be additional requests for the city to leverage this period of reduced ridership and provide RTG with additional temporary closures to further expedite the work and ultimately improve Line 1's performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charter. Is there any questions? Commissioner Wright-Gilbert?
Good morning, everyone. I do have a few questions. I'll try to move through them quickly. Mr. Charters did state that the expectation is that RTG will complete all of the work that needs to be done, the required work by the end of the summer, that's the expectation that we've relayed to RTG. What is our level of confidence that RTG will actually complete this work by the end of the summer? And if they don't, what are the consequences?
So, Mr. Chair, I'll share where we are with them in that discussion. Some of it I can share with this commission today as it relates to the mandate of the Trans Commission. The rest of it will be an update to council that is tracking to July, and it will be an in-camera session because, again, we're the second part of the commissioner's question is the commercially confidential pieces that obviously we don't want to have in a public forum. We are not confident that they're tracking to the end of August, and that's because they have not confirmed to us in writing that they can achieve that date. They have not given us a firm date. So I'm not happy right now, nor is the city manager, as we have spent we spend a good chunk of our time right now managing at the executive level as to we need the service to be reliable and consistent. And so to be blunt and candid, our position with those executives has been to focus on getting it rectified. And the environment that we have now, and again, I'll be very careful what I share in a public forum, is we have OLRTC, or the constructor of RTG arm, saying that the infrastructure is perfect and fine and will be ready. And then you've got Alstom saying that their vehicles are perfect and fine, and they're blaming each other. And our position is we really don't care. We didn't buy a system whereby we're in the middle of you folks. We bought a service that is very simple and straightforward. We bought an outcome, and that's service. That's trains every day reliably. And having said that, we have a process that speaks to part two of your question, Commissioner, which we will share in the July update in camera to council, in that we haven't just been sitting around doing nothing, watching them argue and debate and try to convince us. They have asked us for payments. We have not issued any additional payments, by the way. They have asked us for some cash flows. The city manager denied that. I denied that. We believe they're entitled to some payment. And again, if there is a payment, we'll inform council. And we have just received the information about what January, February, March, and April looks like from an invoicing perspective. And we're going through that right now. So lots of pieces to the puzzle. Our focus is crystal clear. Use this time to get the system corrected. And while you see a lot of progress, I'll give them credit where credit is due. The vehicle count is increasing. They have addressed some of the issues. They've done a lot of work on the catenary and the track, but there's more to be done. And we have a process whereby we're going to verify what work has been done. We're tracking it every step of the way, but we also want to have good validation when they say they're ready for us to validate in terms of that it'll be reliable and consistent.
Thank you, Mr. Maconi. I appreciate your candor. I only wish RTG and Alstom would also exercise the same candor. In the presentation, there was vehicle retrofit work mentioned. Can you provide me just high-level details on what that retrofit work entails?
Certainly. And Mr. Charter, could you just give some examples, please, in straight non-rail speak?
Sorry about that. My mute seems to go off and on real quick sometimes. The retrofit work is there's quite a bit that's done. It could be as simple as changing the locks on the cab doors. The door that the operator uses to get into their cab area, changing those locks, changing the doors as well. It includes things like there was the SIL2 certification, which improved the door operation, which will result in less disruptions for customers, but we're also making some modifications to the mechanisms in that door that should there be a fault with the door, and we know that faults will occur. They occur in all transit systems, but make some adjustments so that the operator is more quickly and more efficiently able to isolate that door and get that train, keep that train in service for our customers. There's some additional changes with regards to some of the temperature settings in both the cab, for the operator as well as for our customers. So there really is, it's quite an extensive list of modifications and retrofits, and some of it was identified early, and some of it, you know, it's through our experience that we know that we need to make some changes. But, you know, as I said, it's from minor things like cab door locks to more significant things like, you know, the door operation and some of the mechanical components associated with it.
Thank you kindly. In the presentation, it was mentioned that there was work being done on the tracks to deal with vibrations. In several previous commission meetings, I and my colleagues have actually raised the issue with respect to the portion of track that's between Saint-Laurent and Leeds Station, specifically that the ride's incredibly rough, lots of vibrations and loud grinding noises. I've heard recently from members of the public and from the transport staff that the issue is still there. What's the specific issue with this section of track?
Troy and Michael, if need be.
Apologies, it keeps going back and forth between mute and unmute. You know, the track, you know, there's some settlement issues that we that need to be addressed. And, you know, that comes with time with as we're running trains over the track. You know, the track will move a little bit and will stabilize. It is a new system. There's some settlement issues there, but as well, they need to look at the wheel rail interface between the vehicle and the track and making adjustments there. So sometimes it's things like, just increasing the amount of, lubrication that comes out from the train to make sure that the rail the trains travel smoothly over the track, you know, as well, or it, you know, can be making some adjustments to the, you know, just the track itself to make sure it's, you know, consistently the same, you know, the you know, like these are, you know, set wheels and they need to run on a set track, so making sure that everything is aligned perfectly. So it's largely a lot of alignment issues that they need to just continually be monitoring tracking, because it is a new system, and you know, there will be some settlement and some adjustments that need to be made. But you know, that's been the focus of the last couple shutdowns, is both the catenary, the overhead catenary system, as well as the track. You know, maybe I could ask if Michael could add a little bit more detail. You know, I'd appreciate that.
And also if you could provide a sort of a estimate of when this issue is going to be rectified as well.
Certainly. I'm going to get Michael to comment, Commissioner. A lot of the track issues are all things that do not concern us, but what I'm going to get Michael to share with you is the one issue, and again, we'll try to avoid the railway speak, but we are in intense discussions with LRTC, RTG, and RTM, because it speaks to track heaving, which I know there's a lot of media, both when the track cracked in the winter and then also when we have our slow orders. That's all normal behavior. The issue here is, how do you minimize that? And I'm going to get Michael to talk about the discussions he's had with them. So everything Troy has described, all part of startup in terms of first year settlement and those types of things. The issue that we're focusing hard on with them is the track, and has to do welding temperatures and so forth. So Michael, can you just give a quick synopsis of that, please?
Yeah, thank you, John. So the rail is set at a neutral temperature. So there's an optimal temperature when the rail is installed. If you set it too high or too low, you can cause problems in either winter or in summer. So some of the rail welding that they've been doing recently deals with that issue. We don't think it's a sustainable approach, though. They're having to make continual changes to the rail, which we're not happy with. And then the other thing that, you know, from a ride comfort point of view, which is what Troy pointed to, the wheel rail interface. So literally the profile of the head of the rail as it matches the wheel, how those two interact, that results in that uncomfortable ride or that noisy ride or the shaking. And so I think it's an area where, you know, as we kind of peel away and get through all of the reliability issues, now we're down to, okay, now we're into ride comfort, ride quality, noise performance. And that's kind of our next focus over the summer and ahead of the winter too, because last winter we did have a rail break, and we want to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Okay, thank you. So there's no real timeline in terms of when this issue is going to be rectified. It's an ongoing issue, some of it expected, some of it not necessarily being handled in the way that that we would like to see by RTG. Is that, would that be a correct synopsis?
Yeah, I would say that we're not satisfied with the, you know, as I mentioned kind of at last meetings, the sense of urgency around correcting the issue. This is an issue that needs to be managed closely over the life of the system. So they need to be paying attention to it all the time. There are some kind of initial issues related to the actual setting of the rail, the heaving, the settling of the ballast that we're seeing that that we need to see corrected and not happen again. And then the other issues we just need to manage over the life of the system. So some of the issues are expected. Some of the issues, we would like them to be fixed as quickly as possible, but we don't have a firm timeline from RTG for that.
Just if I could add, Mr. Chair, for clarity, because I know the RTG folks listen to every word we're saying, and I get these follow-up correspondence about you should have said this, shouldn't have said that, and so forth. But on to give them a fair perspective, they can, if they choose to, tell us, you know what, thanks for your comments on how we adjust the rail track. Back to my opening comments, if we give you the outcome that you're paying us for or that we'll eventually pay us for, how we deal with the track settlement, the track cracks, all that stuff, the way these contracts work, they could theoretically say, thank you for your opinion, we disagree. And that's where we're at right now. We're at a professional disagreement level about, we're saying, take the long view, get it addressed now, it'll be better for you. They could say, and we would have to accept it, you know, we'll deal with it on an as-needed basis, which some railroad operations do. So I just wanted to be fair in that comment to them that they could just push back on this particular issue in that regard.
Well, one thing I will say is though, although, you know, we're being told that this is expected, that it's normal and first year settlement, from a customer point of view, it is, unsettling, from a customer experience perspective to have a really rough ride on the track. With all the other issues that are going on with the LRT right now, this is just one that, you know, provides for a bit of an unsettling ride and can cause customers to perhaps feel a little bit unsafe. So this is something that can be rectified in you know, an expedient manner. I think that is something that could provide a bit more of a positive experience for riders and one less thing for people to complain about. So that's what I'll say about that. Prior to the launch of the LRT, one of the features that was sort of highlighted and lauded about the trains was that there was an existence of an auxiliary power unit on each train that would provide enough power to the train to get it to the next station should a power loss happen or take place in between stations, ensuring that passengers never have to disembark on the tracks or rarely have to disembark on the tracks. During the power losses in late December and January, we saw that this was not the case and that customers were having to disembark on the track. So I do remember from previous meetings and updates that there were some issues with the auxiliary power units. So what is the current status of these units and when will this full functionality be restored?
Certainly, I'm going to get Michael to talk about that. And what I would like Michael to do, because I know there was a lot of comments yesterday, we had a power interruption. The word power gets you kicked around a lot. There's power of the vehicles, power of the catenary, and also the TPSS power. So, Michael, again, in non-rail terms, if you could just walk through that in terms of how the redundancy works and so forth, and where the challenges have been with these quote-unquote stuck vehicles, which are, to the commissioner's point, evacuating of vehicles is always the last resort, and nobody likes to do that. So, just Michael, if you could comment on that, please.
Yeah, so the auxiliary power unit is used to provide essentially secondary power for all the onboard electronics, the signs, the lights, the radio. On this train, it was never intended to be able to move the train. So you can't move this train under battery power. There are other trains where that is possible. I've seen that at least on one project where you could use the batteries to move the train a short distance, but this vehicle wasn't set up that way. So the APU can't be used to move the train between stations from one station to the next. That's not a functionality of this vehicle. Now, there have been APU issues, and those related back to the January-February failures where we saw inductors failing, where we saw line contactors failing. We had a series of vehicle failures all related to contamination on the roof. Those have since been mitigated. They're still working through some of the failure modes on the power systems. But generally, the system's been stable. There was an issue last night with one vehicle. We need to follow up on that. But it's been generally stable since they put in some mitigations earlier in the year.
So perhaps I misunderstood in terms of what the auxiliary power unit does, but I do specifically remember one of the features of this system was that trains could move between, if there was a power loss or something happened, that trains would not get stuck in between stations, that they would, the passengers would somehow magically get to the next station so that they would not have to disembark. And I specifically remember this because I'm claustrophobic, and that was actually one of my main concerns about the trains in the tunnel. So what is the system that provides this functionality, and why was it not working in late December and January?
The redundancy on the power side is related to the supply. So the traction power substations provide power to the overhead catenary. And if you lose one of those traction power substations, you can bypass it and still maintain power to the network. So you can still move the trains if you lose one of the substation. Essentially, if you lose one of the hydro feeds, you can rearrange the configuration to allow the trains to proceed. That is different than having a failure on an individual train. Now, that being said, if you have an individual failure on a train, you should be able to isolate the individual vehicle, and the other vehicle can pull the train to the next station. So, you know, the couple trains essentially provide you with some redundancy. Now, we saw at least a couple of incidents earlier in the year where that redundancy didn't work, where we had to separate the vehicles, where we had to bring kind of a secondary vehicle into to get the vehicles to the station. And so that's a problem that Alstom is aware of. They have been working on that. I believe it's related to the high-speed circuit breaker and the software logic that controls that. I believe it's been corrected. But the redundancy of the two vehicles should, in effect, allow you to get to the next station, save and except for a major failure of one of the subsystems.
So the functionality that was lauded prior to the LRT launching is one, from the sounds of it, that doesn't necessarily actually exist. It should be, is possible, maybe possible, but isn't actually designed functionality to make sure that customers don't have to disembark.
Commissioner, I know exactly what you're asking because we did talk about that during the pre-launch. So a couple of things. Number one, total power failure on a system or a vehicle in a railroad system, a modern railroad system, should not be happening. So the risk tree, if you go down the redundancies, it's like Michael was saying. The first redundancy is we have multiple transformers that kick in if one goes down during a power failure. Secondly, is the auxiliary power on a vehicle. You never want a vehicle to go totally pitch black. People will start panicking and self-evacuating. Very dangerous situation that happened years ago, and that's why you never want vehicles to go totally dark. Our redundancy on one vehicle getting dying, like it did on New Year's Eve, and the second vehicle of that double vehicle dying, that is unheard of. And that's why that was such a big problem in January, and they couldn't move the vehicle out of there. We have that redundancy from the secondary vehicle that it can either push or pull that vehicle and get it out of there. So the last thing you're going to have is people sitting in a black, totally dark vehicle and not being able to move. That's why self-evacuations are something railroaders don't want to do. And so the redundancy comes from the power, the auxiliary power on the vehicle for light and basic functionality, and the ability from the other vehicle to push or pull. What happened in January, both vehicles died. And that's why that one was so disturbing and so catastrophic. They couldn't move that double vehicle out of there. So everybody said, well, tow it out of there. You don't tow double vehicles around. That's unheard of. I mean, we'll be doing some testing on that as a redundancy. We're forcing RTG to do that. But those are the multiple layers of redundancy that are built in.
Okay, thank you. My last question is related to an incident that took place on February 26th on a Line 1 train, February 26th of this year, where a woman was verbally harassed and physically assaulted by a fellow passenger. He threw hot coffee on her. A separate passenger attempted to use the emergency call button on the wall of the train, but no one was able to decipher what the operator was saying due to poor sound quality. The train stopped at Pimisi Station and the perpetrator of the assault exited the train. Bystanders attempted to explain to the Red Vest employee at Pimisi Station what was going on, but the doors of the train closed and the train moved on. According to the information I've received from the Special Constable Unit, the operator should have stopped the train at the next station, i.e. Pimisi, and contacted security. However, neither of these things took place. So I have two questions. When the emergency call button is activated between stations, what is the protocol for operators? And to number two, have any improvements been made to the emergency intercom system?
Yes, Commissioner, I think we can answer all those. Troy, I know you were involved in all that.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm aware of that occurrence. I'd have to familiarize myself a little bit with all the details, but should the emergency call button be activated, it does give a message to the operator, and then the operator should be able to speak with the customer who was in close proximity or who has activated the button. Generally, the operator would would proceed to the next station, and then at that point, would the vehicle would stop, open the doors, and the operator could then go further investigate what's going on. As well, when the emergency button is activated, we also get notification in the TOCC that that's been done. So there's a secondary check between the TOCC and our Transit Operations Control Center, as well as the operator. But normally it would be proceed to the next station, stop at that point, and communicate with the customer, but they do have the ability to communicate to the customer once that button has been pressed. In that specific occurrence, there was an issue with that intercom in that the operator was trying to speak to the person, didn't hear a reply, and I know that the customers reported that they couldn't make out what the operator was saying. So the operator continued on into service as he didn't hear a reply from anyone who pressed the button, and we do have situations where these buttons are erroneously pressed, in which an operator doesn't get a response. Since that occurrence, we've met with RTG and Alstom, and what we've ensured is that they've increased their checks on these. It is a critical safety function. It needs to be checked every day to make sure that it's functioning properly. So they have a series of checks to make sure that these emergency intercom buttons are functioning as they're intended, as it is a critical feature.
Thank you. And I do know my time is up. I do just want to say one thing is that if we don't have security on these trains, which we don't, and I understand the reasoning behind it, if the only security passengers have on these trains are those emergency intercom buttons, my suggestion would be that they need to work perfectly every single time and that the protocol needs to be followed. Otherwise, as passengers, we don't have any confidence that we will have some sort of support or security support on these trains. And so if that message can be relayed to RTM, I would be very pleased. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If I could make a comment on that, I agree with the Commissioner's security's number one issue. But for clarity, Council did approve 6 additional officers for the train service. They are not in cruisers. They're out on the line actively. I know that incident was not the best, but I can tell you that those alarms have been used successfully many, many times. So I agree with the Commissioner's comments that we have to make sure that everything's consistent, reliable, and the tests that Troy talked about are being done. But I just want you to know that we do have additional resources that were deployed specifically for the train service, and they're out on walk and rides. And also the bike and ride unit goes through the pathways onto the trains.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Manconi. Next up is Councillor Brockington, followed by Councillor McKinney. Riley, before you start, I'm experiencing technical difficulties here, so I'm going to have to change devices. Vice Chair Kluche will take over the meeting for a few minutes, and Chris, I'm going to leave and then come back in if you could keep an eye on that, okay? Thank you. Sorry, folks.
Noted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'll just proceed, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Councillor Brockington.
Mr. Manconi, wasn't one of my questions, but how many transit officers are riding the line at any time?
Is Mr. Greer on the line? If not, Troy would also know that. Jim, are you on the system? Troy, can you respond, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. You know, the number of officers does vary from time to time, but you know, we generally try to maintain a minimum of 4 officers riding the line at all times.
Thank you. Okay, so
sorry, Troy. Please add to though that we have a full complement. There's a confidential procedure with red code red alarms and so forth and escalation. So if there's an incident, that's why quite often when there is an incident, whether it's bus or rail, some of the criticism is, why are there so many cruisers on scene, both special constables and Ottawa police? It's an integrated unit. Depending on the issue and the escalation, immediately moves forward. And there are silent alarms on our systems that, again, I'm not going to get into public disclosure of that, but, that's the riding the system. And then we also have the additional complements that respond also.
Just to further, you're correct, Mr. Manconi. We work close, obviously in close partnership with, Ottawa Police Services, who can also respond and react. And as well, you know, our transit and rail supervisors that are out on the line, as well as our EROs, they're all trained, and part of their job expectations is, you know, to be out, to be visible, observe, report. If there is a major issue, that, you know, the special constables can be used, but we also do have eyes and ears with regards to other staff that are actively out on the line and in stations.
Thank you for that. Okay, let's just go back to the ongoing maintenance and repair of the line by RTG, because Mr. Manconi, you know, frankly said what we all know, and that is they're not going to meet the August deadline. So, Mr. Manconi, I just want to pinpoint this. Is this due to an ongoing lack of expertise in knowing how to identify what's wrong and how to fix it? Is it a lack of workers, skilled workers that we need all at one time? Do they need more time to close line one down? Should we just say, all right, next 30 days, we'll close the line down, and you've told us you're convinced that's what you need to make sure this is ready, because we can't reopen Ottawa come Labor Day and not have reliable public transit. And we cannot go into another winter with exactly the same things happening that happened the last winter. So can you give us an idea of what the real issue is of why this is not being fully addressed and fixed?
So I'll start with your last point, which I agree 100% with you, Commissioner, Councillor. When we reduced the fleet count, my second thing to Peter Lausch was, and by the way, if you need a day, you need a week, you need a weekend, you need an entire month. I offered them the entire month of July, by the way, to shut down totally. So that has not been an obstacle. And to that, their counter to me is, we'd love to do that, but only so many people working concurrently and so forth. So I don't know why they're not seizing that opportunity. They have seized longer extensions than what they originally planned, so that's good. Do they have a plan? Yes, they've submitted that. Do they have adequate resourcing? I think so, but I come from the school of you over-resource and then you peel back. As we saw, you know, we did the recovery plan yesterday. You saw red vests everywhere. That's because I didn't want to be short if we had an influx of people needing masks and so forth. The COVID is one of the issues that they're saying is a challenge for them. They did, in fairness to them, you know, they got hit with COVID just like we did. So awesome experience, a worldwide shutdown, for example. Their supply chain on normal parts and labor got affected. I can't answer your question, and I know you want me to. For an organization that wants to be paid and only gets paid when I get the product, I don't understand it. And they call Steve Canilac, the city manager, and myself every second day looking for money. And we keep telling them the easiest way that council will support us giving you money is if you give us the service. To me, it distills down to that. And I'm with you, Councillor. I'm not giving anybody a date because I don't have a date. I'm not putting this organization and I'm not putting yourselves and our customers through another winter of hell. I'm not. And I made that clear to RTG, and they're not getting paid because they're not producing product. And, you know, we're not going to lose the bad experiences. I'm not forgetting New Year's Eve. I'm not. January was horrible for our service, our brand, our customers. And the sad part of all this, Counselor, it is an amazing system. I spent all of Monday morning on it. It is phenomenal. The world is still talking about what it is, how transformative it is, and it will be. We will get there. If they just focus, stop the commercial talk, stop the lawyers back and forth, and focus on fixing it. There are people that can help them out. Do they have everybody? I don't have line of sight in there. I'm not in there. We're not as attuned to what they were doing. They're very guarded right now. They're well-intended. I'm not being malice in any of my comments.
Sorry, my phone's ringing. I can't stop that. Is there a risk in waiting until the end of August when they say we can't deliver or we can't complete this by the end of August? Is there a risk in waiting until the council meeting in mid-July to get additional direction from council rather than even coming to council at the end of June to give you, I don't know, increased marching orders if that's possible? I just want to be able to, as a commission or ultimately as a council, give you whatever you need to ultimately get the best service that we need for this city.
You have given the city manager and I everything we need. That in-camera briefing was very, very healthy, I think, for all of us. But what I need from council is all of you to start continually publicly saying what your expectations of RTG are. RTG and Alstom and all of those Talus, all of those suppliers in there, we paid for a $2.1 billion system. We expect great service. That's what I need from council. It can't just be John Manconi out there, you know, saying, RTG, you need to step up. Every one of you need to be saying that, or that's my ask. But in terms of authority and jurisdiction and power and tools, you've given us everything. The PA is very strong in that respect. And quite frankly, I want RTG to be successful, because if they're successful, we're successful and our customers are happy. And I'll pay them gladly.
The financial update to OC Transpo, particularly as a result of COVID, we're not getting a specific update here at the Transit Commission. Are you saying that's coming to the June 24th City Council meeting? Sorry, you're on mute.
No, the city manager is giving an update on the financial impacts across the entire city, as you've asked for, in June. Obviously, Transit will form part of that. We'll continue to have our dialogues in terms of our impacts. I mean, our losses are significant in terms of revenue, and ridership is still very, very low. So, and then we have the expense side of the new recovery plan.
So when do we address this? Sorry, I'm a popular guy today. When do we address how do we, as a transit commission, wrestle the projected deficit for 2020? We're going to get an outlook, a more precise outlook, on June 24th. But when will the Transit Commission have to wrestle cost recoveries, cost reductions, a revised budget? Is that coming through City Council, or how does the Transit Commission provide guidance on that particular matter?
Mr. Kanellakis is going to be walking you through that exact point when he updates you in that, in terms of giving you the broader city picture, and then how do you tackle it from the service level or from a committee commission level?
Okay, so my last question just is on payments to RTG. You're saying that they're being quite assertive in asking for payments. So in 2020, have you paid anything to them?
No, the only payments we've made are that initial payment that we talked about, the normal utilities bills that go through that we've talked about in our memo. So it's water, electricity, and things like that. They have asked for a payment from looking at September all the way to the end of December in terms of there's millions of dollars we're holding back that we have not paid them on. They've asked us for a payment on that. Mr. Kanellakis was very direct and said, we will review again with our legal team and our technical team. We will pay you what you're entitled to, but we're not going to make a quote unquote a deal and hey, because we like you, here's some additional money to get going. And again, all that will form part of our update to you in July. They are entitled to some payment. And then we're just looking at the new year invoices from January all the way through to May in terms of what they're entitled to. And again, they will be entitled to some payment there because April and May was much easier in terms of service delivery. But January was a brutal month also. So, and all along through this, they are in default and they remain in default.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, can you just remind me or maybe the committee coordinator updates on Trillium line extension, the construction, is that going to go through FEDCO or does that come through us?
Yeah, the understanding I have is that anything to do with construction, so stage one construction until it became operational is FEDCO, and stage two, while it's under construction, is also FEDCO. The Transit Commission just has the operations side of everything.
Okay, so Mr. Manconi, will we be getting quarterly in-person Trillium line, or sorry, phase two updates from you? Are those in the queue?
Yeah, no, we've told you in the past, all the updates on stage two are going to FEDCO quarterly.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Next up, Commissioner Caricato.
Hi, thanks so much. Question about the cosmetics, I guess, of the trains. Mr. Scrimger and I were exchanging emails back in March about installing electronic signage outside the station so riders could make an informed decision before going down into the station or through the fare gate, particularly para riders who, you know, don't get around as easily and have to take multiple elevators at times, and then only to get down to the station to find out the train is, you know, 14 minutes away. Is there any progress on that, or do you have an update for us?
Pat, could you please comment?
It remains something we're looking at. You'll have seen the LCD large TV screens in the stations and the different panels of information that we publish there. We're looking at installing more of those closer to the entrances so people can see some of that information before they enter the station. But I'll also point out that, the delivery of the next train arrival information, which we would be publishing there, is currently available from RTG only on the LED screens on the station platforms, the orange signs. And yeah, has not yet been delivered to us in a data feed, which we can distribute to our customers through multiple channels. It remains an item for RTG to deliver to us.
Is there a timeline for that, or are we checking in?
It remains one of the things that we require from RTG before the project is complete. And unless Michael Morgan has any more information, I don't think we've heard an estimated date for the provision of that.
Okay. I'll keep posted, I guess. Now just a couple general comments about the recovery plan. I rode the LRT yesterday. I agree it was not very busy. But I was kind of shocked at Rideau Station and, well, actually all of them, that the doors were not propped open. I know that's one of the Ottawa public health guidelines for restaurants and other public spaces, and I'm wondering if you guys thought about that or if there's a reason why not.
Yes, I believe we looked at that, Commissioner, and I think it has to do with safety, but I'll ask Mr. Charter to comment, please. Troy? Maybe we can go to the next question, Commissioner, and we'll come right back to you on that one. Is that okay?
Sure. Sure. Regarding the Red Vest ambassadors and handing out masks, I did notice, of course, there were a few riders that didn't have masks. It didn't look like to me that the ambassadors were actively going up to those riders and saying, you know, it's mandatory, here's a mask. It was more sort of, and I actually did witness one sort of ambassador go up to a rider while he was passing, and he said no, he declined to take the mask. So I'm wondering if, I know we're not turning anybody away, but if you're offered a mask, do you have to take that mask, or can you just continue riding and saying, not for me, thanks?
No, Commissioner, great point. I saw the same thing. So our ambassadors are trained to proactively offer the mask, and there's a process for that. You see them with the tweezers and the masks that they have themselves and double protection. I witnessed that at Tunney's also. There was one gentleman that was adamant. He said, I don't want a mask. No, thank you. And so forth. So they are trained to approach people to see if they want one, but we're still in that education period, and we're happy with the numbers. And yes, I mean, I was on a bus. One person didn't have a mask. The other 10 people did. I actually counted everybody on my route. So I'm seeing the same thing. And we're just, again, walking that fine line of a careful, balanced education campaign. And we're happy with the numbers so far.
And lastly, on the hand sanitizers, they weren't that easy to find because they're quite small. And that little blue sign doesn't necessarily jump out to you. I don't know if you thought of other ways to sort of make them more visible with arrows on the floors or stickers or something. Is that something you've thought about?
Yes, great point. And it was something we were going to share with Pat on our daily call today. We got to enhance the signage is the feedback we've heard. The other thing too, we'd love to get more, but supply and demand right now is so hard to get the ones we got. Mr. Greer actually manufactured some for the BRT station. So we're going to be adding sanitizers, but in the meantime, I agree with your stickers, larger, wall-mounted, or even on the floor is a great idea.
Super. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Caricato. Next up is Councillor McKinney.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thanks to staff for the presentation. A lot of things feel like Groundhog Day, and this does as well. I'm sure it does for you as well. I mean, really, I'm not sure why Alstom cares what we think. You know, that is the problem, right? Is that we are not, Alstom is the problem right now, and we're not managing Alstom. We're trying to manage RTG, RTM to manage Alstom. And quite frankly, they don't care. They got what they needed, and they continue to build us trains. And we've paid for those trains. And I don't see why Alstom feels compelled to do anything more than what it's doing today, which is, I don't even know if it's the bare minimum. Here we are, you know, 9 months later in the middle of summer, and they can't get this right. So with nobody on the train. So. I want to know, what is the plan for managing Alstom? Is there a plan? Is there anything we can do? Because that is what the problem is. We're hovering over RTM, trying to poke them to poke Alstom, who don't
Chair,
care.
I cannot get into the details. That's the update for the confidential update, but I can share that there is a plan, and we're not waiting. We already activated that plan. We activated it weeks ago. And I will say this, I think RTM, Alstom, and everybody on this project do care. It's about how do they get there. Just again, I'm not going to get into specifics, but remembering that nobody's getting paid. So they're not getting what they want. And so that's all part of the strategy that we will share with you in the in-camera briefing. But Councillor, I can assure you that we do have a plan. We've activated the plan. And it invokes a lot of innovative things with the PA always being the leverage and with some good strategies that we've brought forward.
So Alstom has not been paid for their trains?
No, again, I'll just keep it high level. Remember, there's a monthly payment that payment goes to everybody that contributes, and Alstom has the biggest chunk of this. They do the trains, they do the maintenance and so forth. So
in our in-camera briefing, will I get detail on that?
You can ask all those questions, absolutely. Sharon will be there again, and absolutely we can give you all that information.
Okay. When are we going to see RTG executive back in front of us?
It's up to the commission and the chair for that.
What do I need to do, Chair, to get RTG executives back in front of us? I think that this is untenable. This is, you know, here we are, you know, mid to late June, shutting down the system again for, you know, to expedite, I suppose. But we're not seeing any progression. We haven't since the winter. And I imagine I speak for at least the majority of commission members that this has become a situation that we cannot just sit, you know, close down our Zoom and wait until the next month to get another update. So I'm looking to you, Chair, and we can have this conversation, but offline, but I will be, you know, I am formally requesting that RTG executive come back in front of us in public and explain what's going on. Just two more quick questions.
Can I answer that first?
Go ahead, Chair.
So I think what we should do is take the in-camera briefing first, and then, as you suggest, we'll talk about it offline after that in-camera briefing. And I agree with you that it'd be great to get them to come in. It's just I'm not so sure what they're going to tell us that's going to make us feel any better here. So let's do the in-camera and then have a discussion of that afterwards. But I'm certainly open to it. I'm just not quite sure what they're going to tell us that we're going to be confident in. Okay?
Yeah, no, I certainly don't disagree with you there. I just think that's some accountability on their part. But no, I appreciate that, and we can have that conversation after.
Thank you. So you had a couple other questions?
Yeah, just a couple other. They're more detailed, really. A few days ago, I was just going down to Pimisi, and I noted that the pathway from Albert down to Pimisi is completely gravel-filled, and I just wonder if it's being forgotten in the maintenance. And I'm never sure whether that's Public Works or if that's transit services, but it seems that new pathway down to Pimisi has been forgotten. So I just wanted to raise that to ensure that it's on somebody's work schedule.
Yes, Councillor. As you know, that's one of my walking trails, and I noticed it the other day myself too. So I'll be speaking to Mr. Pritchard on that one.
Okay, good. I just figured it had been forgotten. It's odd times, so I just wanted to raise that. And just lastly, and this one is Councillor Leeper, who couldn't stay on the meeting call, asked me to ask when we can expect further noise mitigation issues for the trench at the Hindenburg Mechanicsville trench.
I know Michael's been speaking with the councillor. Michael, could you give an update, please?
Yeah, we're just closing out some final testing. The team, the noise consultant, has been doing some tests to assess the effectiveness of the dampeners to have kind of a final, more definitive answer on the results. And we're looking at, there's two more options we're looking at. We need the test results first, and then once we have those, then there's a couple of different firms we've engaged to look at additional mitigations. I don't, unfortunately, have a timeline for when we can get that. You know, two of them are, or one of them anyways, coming from the UK, and so that's kind of caused a bit of a slowdown in our efforts in that area because of the recent travel restrictions. But no timeline yet, but we are still looking at doing additional work in the trench area to reduce the noise.
Okay, thank you. I'll pass that on if he hasn't heard himself. Thanks, Chair. That's all I have for today.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Councillor Gower from Stittsville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, hello from Stittsville. I just wanted to change gears from the RTG piece and go back to the first part of the presentation from Mr. Scrimger on the positive observations so far from recovery. I wanted to highlight for my fellow commissioners an article that was published in The Atlantic on the weekend called Fear of Public Transit Got Ahead of the Evidence. And it's an excellent look at the experience of cities in Europe and Asia as they've gone into recovery mode, as their transit systems have returned, maybe not quite to full capacity, but certainly getting there, and they've been able to do so safely, and they've played an important role in the recovery and economic health of their cities. And I'm glad that we've had positive results here 3 days into our recovery, and I'm confident that staff at OC Trans will continue that. I want to read it one sentence from that article. The way out of the economic crisis brought on by the pandemic runs along the rails and bus lanes of cities to avert the mobility meltdown that threatens to swallow them if even a fraction of former transit commuters take to cars. I still don't think we're fully appreciating in our city as a whole, not just council, but our city as a whole, how important OC Transpo and transit is in the short term here for our recovery from COVID-19, but also in the longer term as our city keeps growing. So I'm going to share that link on my Twitter feed, and maybe I'll email it out to commissioners as well. Really encourage all of you to read that and just think about what we need to do as a transit commission, as a council, to support the recovery and the growth of transit over the next months and years. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Manconi, for the presentation, Mr. Charter, Mr. Scrimger as well. So I have a couple of questions for you. The actions that were outlined for RTG to undertake to improve service, there's some you've noted that were completed or that are in train going on or foreseen. Is there anything that you identified as necessary that RTG is not doing yet?
Michael, can you comment on that, please?
I think that, the core systems on the vehicle, the core systems of the train control system, that's fully within their remit. The one area where, they've been working on the issue, we're still not satisfied with the outcomes is with the switchgears. That's one where I was on a call with them yesterday. They don't have a fully formed plan as of yet to the modifications. So I've taken some steps to engage some people on my side to provide a little bit more direction on that. That's probably the area where we see some additional room for improvement in their plan. When it comes to the vehicle subsystems, when it comes to the other subsystems, I think they're doing what they need to. As I mentioned earlier, still some kind of question marks about the effectiveness of some of the stuff as it relates to the track and the overhead catenary. And so we need to do some due diligence after the fact once they've completed their work. But I would say that switch heaters is probably the one area where they're not doing as much as they could.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Manconi, at the meeting on June 1st, you mentioned that there had been 10 OC Transpo employees who had tested positive for COVID-19. Is there any change in the last couple of weeks?
I don't believe so. It was 10, and I have not seen any updates since then. Troy, that number hasn't moved, correct? Troy's got comms issues. No, I don't believe it has. I will confirm and report back to the commission if you'd like, Commissioner.
Okay, thank you. And I also take it then that no cases in the city have been traced back to OC Transpo. That may be an Ottawa public health issue, though, I understand. But are you aware?
It's an Ottawa public health issue, but we have, as part of our recovery, and I appreciate Councillor Gower pointing to that article. There's other great articles out there right now. Talking about if you can look at traceability back to the transit system, if you can on that. So I know that it's on public health's radar screen in terms of that, because we want to be able to react if there is any evidence that it is transit that's contributing to the spread. So it's part of our recovery strategy.
Okay, thank you. My final question is about masks and the education, not enforcement route that we're taking, which I accept fully. Some people have expressed a concern to me that the education might in fact involve OC Transpo employees asking people why they're not wearing a mask. And is that the case now, or do you ever foresee that being the case?
Our training program is not to get into debates or doubts. Invisible disabilities could exist. We're being very sensitive. We had the discussion with our accessibility committee and so forth. We if we had nobody wearing masks, I think we'd need to pivot. We've had good success. It's early days. Hopefully people stay with it. More and more you're seeing masks being used everywhere in terms of people going out to the stores and venues and so forth. So if we have to adjust in the future, we will, but I don't see that being in the near future unless things start to erode quickly and people don't comply with the mask requirement.
Okay. Mr. Manconi, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Next up is Councillor Kavanaugh, please.
Thank you very much. And thank you to my colleagues for their excellent questions. My question is in regards to public confidence and going forward. I got asked to do a Stats Canada survey last night, and I went through it. One of the questions was about, do you plan to take public transit? I think we do need to do some investigation on what people's fears are, what their concerns are, and going forward, and do some research on getting people back on track, as it were, and find out what we can do to make that because we had issues before with reliability and concerns, but we do have to do rebuilding, and this is the opportunity to do it. Obviously, we went down to very, very low numbers. At some point, they are going to go up, and we don't know if they're going to go back up to what they were before. Maybe people will continue to work from home forever, but we do need that information to find out what our fares are going to be, what our schedules are going to be. What kind of research are we doing going forward on next steps?
Great question, Councillor. Music to my ears, because the recovery plan that you see is based on, it's data driven. So a couple of things. First, we're on both the Canada-wide and the North American-wide recovery task force for APTA and CUTA. I'm a member on both of those, and then staff that are on this call and that part of the recovery plan are on the subcommittees. We pulled every single survey that's out there, including the earlier ones about that answers your question about, you know, what are your fears with transit? When will you get back? Why will you get back? There's the article that Councillor Gower pointed to. We're data rich. The overarching theme from the public is what does public health say? And we are blessed that we have such a great public health staff with Dr. Etches at the lead. She was instrumental in being part of our plan. So it says make sure that your public health agency is part of that. The other number one priority is cleanliness and demonstrating that you are committed and deploying resources. So your plan spends about $1 million a month on cleaning resources, sanitation, the hand sanitizers, and so forth. And mandatory masks is the other big piece. And so the surveys point to it's split. There's a percentage of the population that will go on, back on if they see all those boxes checked off. There's a portion that's sitting and waiting, and there's a portion that doesn't have to use transit. And then there's a portion that has been disproportionately disadvantaged, and that's women in particular and across North America. And there's an interesting study, a series of studies being looked at why that's the case. Is it safety? Is it other issues and so forth? And marginalized communities. So we've got a lot of data that's getting fed into Pat. He keeps all that stuff and helps shape our recovery plan. And then the second part of your question is very important also. Where is it trending? What does the recovery look like? What does the new transit world look like? Fares, the cost to operate the system, commuting patterns. We're watching very carefully. I know a couple of you asked me what the federal government is doing. What are the universities doing? That will come out of both our financial challenge and our service recovery challenges in the months to come. So there's a lot of dialogue, and it'll all be data driven. And certainly, I can't emphasize it enough, the equity inclusion lens has to be a key piece to this in terms of, we saw how dependent those that are disadvantaged in our community rely on transit, and we need to be there for them every step of the way.
I appreciate those comments. Don't forget connectivity, because it's about getting to the bus stop. And I know that Mr. Morgan is working on that for stage two, because that's a big concern in terms of getting there. It's not just how you feel on the bus, but are we making it as easy as possible to get there? So that continues. I appreciate hearing about CUDA. The executive director used to be an intern in my office when he was a high school student. So have times have changed. Great guy. I appreciate the fact that there is work to be done there. One of the questions I have in terms of going forward is, we've talked about reliability, and in terms of those monitors on buses, how's that coming along in terms to in terms of apps that are going to tell us when a bus is coming on time? Particularly if there's cutbacks in schedules, people don't want to stand around waiting outside, and they need reliability on when it's arriving.
Certainly. I know Pat was looking at that and providing updates across the board. Pat, could you comment on that, please?
Yes, there's two aspects to that. One is, there's more than two, but here are two of the aspects. One is the new system that we will have for tracking the location of all buses. You'll remember the story previously that we were using, we have been using a GPS tracking system, which is now about 10 or 15 years old, replacing it with a new up-to-date, modern, commercially supplied system. We will be installing that system this year. Our installation of that system into our complete transit operations control center operation needs to have a timing that is set when they're ready to, when everyone's ready to allocate staff to that conversion, which wasn't possible during the reduced service period because our attention was being spent on so many other things. A second part of this is the new interface that we have available to pick up our data, and for the independent developers and our own app and our own screens to use that data. And we're getting closer to pushing out that new API, as it's called, to make it available to those developers so they can start to change their apps to pick up the more detailed information that we'll be publishing once the dispatch system is replaced.
Great. Can we see that this fall?
I expect we will see it. I don't want to promise anything, because we probably would have had it by now if not for the amount of staff time that we had to move over to deal with COVID and the service reduction.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner or Councillor Kavanaugh. Vice Chair Kluche, please.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of questions. Thank you very much for the presentation and for the details on the rollout of the recovery plan. And I, too, like Councillor Gower, I read the article in The Atlantic, and I think it was The Atlantic. It was very telling and hopeful. Just a couple of questions. We've seen, I think, in some of the exchanges I've had, an increase from 15 to 20 to 25% of ridership on OC Transpo. Is that reflective of paratranspo also? Have we seen the same curve for riders of para?
Pat, do you have the para data?
I'm afraid I don't have that data. I will certainly find out about it and do that as quickly as I can, and I'll send the vice chair an email this afternoon if I can get it that soon.
I appreciate that. The fundamental question is, how long will we be able to accommodate one passenger per trip which I think is what we are doing now. And are we still able to accommodate that one passenger per trip right now, Pat?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So the fundamental question is, how long will we be able to accommodate that? What will be the messaging with respect to the customers of Paratranspo as we transition, as ridership goes up on Para, as we transition back to perhaps two or three passengers per trip? How will we provide information so that we can ensure that in that close quarter of a Para vehicle, that passengers are equipped with personal protective equipment, and so that everybody does everything they can to reduce the risk of transmission?
I think what the message is that we give to our customers on Paratranspo when that time comes will depend on what is the current public health advice at that time. If we get to that point, if we were there now, we'd be providing information similar to what we're providing to people on the conventional system. But if we don't get to that point for several months down the road, and by that point, public health advice is different, then we would modify what the message is that we give to customers. As for how we give it to customers, we have many ways of getting that information to customers. One of the characteristics of Paratranspo that makes it especially easy to provide information to customers is that every trip on Paratranspo begins with a booking, whether it's done by voice or whether it's done online. Every trip begins with a booking, so there's an opportunity at that point of that booking to provide a complete set of advice. And the other thing I would say is that the current mask requirement does apply to customers on all parts of the OC Transpo system, including Paratranspo.
Thank you, Pat. And yes, indeed, given that we have emails or connection with individual customers as they choose to use Para, that certainly does provide an opportunity for that information. Can you give us an update on a very important part of the work plan for OC Transpo for 2020, the online booking? Just let us know how that is going with respect to that interim step of online booking for Para, and the development of the app that we are hoping is still scheduled for the end of 2020.
We are still on track. There have been to this point no delays resulting from non-availability of staff as a result of the pandemic. We continue to be careful about that. There are many steps along the way with many crucial groups of people, both who work here at the city or at the vendor. So it's going well so far. We are still on track at the moment, but we remain wary that the public health situation and the need for people's availability to get it done may be more fragile this year than it would otherwise be.
What is the, can you give us just a quick percentage of the number of Para trips that are being booked online versus the interim web form?
I don't have a detailed number for that, but I can tell you there continue to be trips booked online and cancellations received online every day. But first of all, with the number of trips being made being so low in comparison to where it would normally be. And second, because of that, the call queues are not slow at all. So the reason for people, if people find the online booking more convenient, they will continue to use the online booking. But if they were using the online booking because they didn't want to sit in a long call queue, our call queues are not long right now because the demand for service is so much lower than usual. But I will see what I can get along with the other information. I'll get some recent information of how many bookings and how many cancellations are being made on a typical day, and I'll send that through to you.
Appreciate that. And just one more, Chair, if we could, I think there was an unanswered question from Commissioner Caricata with respect to doors being propped open at transit stations. And I don't know if Mr. Charter has overcome his technical issues. I just want to bring to the attention that that question remains unanswered. And those are all my questions and comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Troy, are you able to jump in yet?
Or? Well, maybe I'll just test. Are you able to hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. Yeah, with regards to the propping of the doors, we have looked into that, and there's a combination of issues. Some of the doors, you know, especially those at the downtown tunnel stations, are considered fire doors, so it's code that the doors can't be propped open. They need to stay shut. And then other locations, you know, it was looked at, and you know, it may impede the flow of passengers. It may result in an obstruction. So, you know, we are continuing to look at it. But one of the main reasons, you know, and John had mentioned it was a safety related one, and it's largely related to these doors are they're rated a certain way, and we connected with Ottawa Fire Services, and we had those discussions with them, and a lot of those doors needed to stay shut due to their rating. So it was a safety consideration. Yes, thank you.
And any of the other questions you were asked, did you want to jump in, Troy, right now? Or?
Yeah, just to confirm, you know, Mr. Manconi was correct in that there haven't been any recent occurrences of staff that have tested positive. We have had a few staff that have gone for testing, but you know, thankfully they've all come back as negative, and so there hasn't been any recent occurrences.
And all employees have fully recovered too, correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Next up is Commissioner Wright-Gilbert.
Sorry, me again. I'll try to keep it short. Two things. One, I just want to say that I support Councillor McKinney's request to have RTM, RTG, whatever we're calling them these days, be at every single Transit Commission meeting going forward. I think that it is slightly unfair for Mr. Manconi and his staff to have to answer questions that I think would be better answered or more suited to be directed towards RTM. I think that RTM needs to hear our frustration and our questions and our ideas firsthand, though I suppose they now could watch them on YouTube. But I'd like for them to be held accountable. And part of that is for them to attend this meeting on an ongoing basis. I would suggest until the issues are resolved, though that could be quite some time. The only leftover question I had from my list was about escalator speeds, sorry. So in the fall of 2019, I actually got to experience the early days of R1 service from Saint-Laurent Station going east to Orleans. Mr. Manconi may recall a quite lengthy email, although I do tend to send him a few of those, detailing my experience, the issues I took note of, and some suggestions. One of the issues that I raised was the escalator speed that it's traveling. I suppose during these times where R1 service is implemented, and there is a lot of people trying to travel from the train itself up to the bus platform. So this is specific to Saint-Laurent Station, but could also be implemented at other stations as well. The escalator speed is too fast because the crowds of people that are up at the top of the exit of the train station into the bus area are such that they cannot, it's a choke point. They can't actually move quickly out of that area. And so what I actually experienced coming off the escalator was that I smashed into, because of the propulsion of the escalator, I smashed into the people in front of me, pushing them and apologizing profusely. And then people behind me were also shoving into me because the escalator was actually propelling them. And so my question is that, has any action been taken to address this issue? Because I do know that it's an ongoing issue just from messages I've received from customers. And is it possible to reduce the speed of the escalators during these high volume events?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to confirm with Michael. I doubt we'll be able to answer that question today. I'm happy to take it and get back to the commissioner on the escalator, because escalators, believe it or not, it's highly specialized. They're very rigid in terms of what's permitted and not. And a lot of it stems from a very bad subway fire in England. So I'm happy to take the question and get back to you on the speed variability, unless Michael can answer that today. I don't know if Michael, are you aware? I don't have an answer for you, Commissioner, but I'll check with Michael.
Yeah, we would have to take that away.
So if you're okay with that, Commissioner, we'll take it away and get back to you on the speed adjustment piece. That's a complicated question in terms of what's permitted and not.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm concerned about, just based on my own personal experience and that's been relayed to me from other customers. It is a safety concern, especially because given the choke point, especially at Celeron Station, I'm concerned that folks are being pushed and shoved, not because people are rushing, but literally the escalator speed is just too fast delivering humans to the top. So I appreciate that you'll get back to me on that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Now, I just want to answer your questions or give some more information here. I'm comfortable with talking with Councillor McKinney after the other commissioners after we do the in-camera briefing on this about bringing RTG in. But my comments to say that I'm not quite sure what they're going to offer is, I'm thinking back to the last time the CEO came to commission. He made some comments to the commission and to media afterwards about extra trains being available that just never came to reality. So that's what I mean, is just because he says something doesn't mean it actually happens. And so that's what I was referring to there. But I'm not open to the idea of putting them on the agenda for every single meeting until we see what takes place in the in-camera. And if we invite them in at a future meeting to answer some questions, I'd like to see what happens with the information they provide. Basically, we're going to fact check what they tell us. And then we as a commission can decide if we want to invite them back. Because Mr. Manconi and his team is actually the link between RTG and this commission. I would also add that the city manager, Steve Gatlakis, is very involved in that relationship with city's legal department now as well. So there's a lot of stuff going on in that relationship right now that is not meant for public meetings like the commission, and hopefully gets worked out behind the scenes and things repaired. So with all respect, I'm going to decline your request to add them to every agenda, and let's just go forward with trying to get them onto the next meeting. Okay.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. It was less of a request and just more of a suggestion, but absolutely. I agree with you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any other questions, folks? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Manconi and your team, for that update. So we'll move on to item number 3, which is the operating and capital budgets for Q1. I can't remember who asked to hold that. Commissioner Wright Gilbert, you got your hand up. Go ahead.
That was me that asked to hold it, and I guess I'm the only one with questions. So I'm actually surprisingly going to try to keep this short. In a number of places in the Q1 status report, there's costs that are attributed to insufficient number of trains to meet regular service levels. In document 2, it indicates that we've spent over 300% of the planned budget for trust transit customer systems and planning, as well as safety, compliance, training, and development. Both of these cost overruns are noted to be as a result of non-performance by RTG in delivery of line 1. And then in document 3, OLRT transition is noted to be over budget by approximately $34 million. So my question is, with all of these costs that seem to be related to the late delivery of line 1, insufficient number of trains, and so on and so forth, how much of these costs can be recouped from RTG?
So Mr. Chair, we're following what we've told you in the past. We are tracking all of the costs that are related to these interruptions, and that's part of the not paying RTG also. In addition, you'll recall when they achieved RSA, there was substantial amounts of money that was held back to recoup costs for the delays. And those costs keep accumulating. For example, the dedicated R1 buses are on there and so forth. So we're tracking all those. Our intent is not to pay RTG their monthly payments and to bill them all that stuff that we've shared with you in camera. Whether or not we're successful in that regard, I mean, they're challenging us on this stuff, as you know, but it's all being tracked and billed back to them.
Thank you. I can appreciate that. Hopefully, we will one day get our money's worth. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, Vice Chair Cloutier.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Commissioner Wright-Gilbert, for that question about, it was one of my questions. So just a clarification, you were referring to page 5 of document 3 and an account number 906169. My fundamental question, and I'm not quite clear with the answer, Mr. Manconi, is that where we are capturing the costs that we intend, that $34.9 million, is that where we are capturing some of the costs that we intend to bill back to RTG for their non-performance?
So as you know, we have a very talented treasurer that knows this stuff inside out, and I'm not an accountant by any stretch. So if our treasurer is still on the call, I don't see her name. I would ask her to speak about the accounting mechanics as to how we're tracking and recouping. Wendy, are you still on?
I am, John. Thank you very much. And Councillor Fuchi, you are correct. Yes, the costs are falling within that capital account. So that's where you see that large number from. So we're tracking a good majority there. Again, to John's point with the hopes and the want to recover those funds from RTG. So that's the, I'm going to suggest, a significant variance that you see on this report today.
Okay. Thank you.
It's Isabel, if I could add to the $34 million does not reflect the Mobility Matters deduction of $30.5 million that we had also offset on the last RSA payment. So there is a $30 million to offset a large portion of that $34.
Okay. So just to be clear, that a portion of that is what we expect to get back from RTG. But that is not the, and it's part of the claims and it's part of a legal process, but that is not the entire amount. Does that reflect reality?
No, it's great that Isabel's on the line also. Isabel was explaining, reminding us all that we held back large amounts of sums to RTG, and it was under the title of Mobility Matters, which was one of the provisions in the contract. So that's the $30 million that Isabel was referring to.
Okay. Just a couple more questions in document 3, page 1. The sixth item from the bottom of page 1, in account 908990, Prince of Wales Bridge, pier work, $5 million. It is not a transit bridge, I know, and we just had the briefing from the Société des Transports de l'Outaouais with respect to their preferred link between downtown Gatineau and downtown Ottawa across the Portage Bridge. What is the nature of this work with respect to, and given the new reality, or what we've heard from the STO, does that work continue to go? How does that relate to transit, the Prince of Wales Bridge?
Well, you recall the transit, that bridge is a future connection that needs to be preserved. There's a ruling on that from the federal government. And so that money was originally booked for some pier work that will need to be done at some point. We're looking at that. We're looking at options and so forth now that we know where the STO is. Our intent is to continue to preserve that for a future rail multi-use pathway, court multi-use system. And if we need to spend that money, we'll spend it for the structural integrity preservation. That's what that was intended for.
Okay, thank you. Just one final question, and it relates to a news item I saw yesterday, Mr. Manconi, with respect to the TTC, and they are going to be giving out free Presto cards. I know that as part of our recovery plan, we announced encouraging contactless payment and a project whereby we will ask or encourage or permit customers to use their debit or credit cards to board the bus, and fully supportive of that. As it relates to that, there's an item on page 2, just below item number 900300, just below renewal of city assets, IT smart card. And it's a large amount, $34 million is the project. Can you tell me what that item is and how that relates to part of our recovery plan and accepting other methods of payment, of contactless payment on our buses and trains?
Certainly. I'll ask Pat to give a summary of that. Pat?
Thanks.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that account, that large account of smart card, is the original account for Presto. So that dates back many, many years. That account is always always shows the status, but doesn't show, and Isabel or Wendy might be able to explain more if you want. There's also some recoveries from Metrolinx there that are not shown in the balance. So our, as we need to do more work to Presto, we have continued to draw on the funds available in that account and to ask council to extend the period for that period and for that account until we use it all up. We're getting close to that. We've got other accounts we've also used to build the fare system, for instance, the installation of the equipment on line one and line two. And we've got further work that we're working on for the future to equip the stage two extensions. But that's what that account was. And so that account has been around a very long time and has a lot of things charged against it.
So it's so large because it was the original Presto funding account.
It's actually even older than that. That account's been around longer than before the decision was made to go with Presto. And that was the original smart card account set up by council many, many years ago.
Got it. Thank you very much. Those are all my questions.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cloutier. Councillor Cavanaugh.
Thank you. And in terms of just further to Councillor Cloutier's question about Presto cards, I've asked this before about suspending the cost of Presto cards for people who use Equipasses, et cetera, because to get that buy-in, I think there's a lot of people that are, it would be helpful health-wise, so we should be encouraging it, because a lot of people who can't, afford monthly passes necessarily, but go through the ticket system, would consider it, except they balk at that small charge. But I think it's a really important one to encourage people to use it, even if it's just sometimes, even if they're not buying monthly passes. Is that possible to suspend the fee of the Presto card to get people, woo them back to using transit again? And also because of the fact that it's a public health issue, because that would encourage them to get away from cash use and tickets. Thank you.
Councillor, if the commissioner and council wants us to consider any suspension of fees, we would need that via a motion. We're following what was in the approved budget. And I know it may not be a large sum, but right now I would encourage you to wait for the financial update and so that you see the pressures that we're under. It's immense in transit, and we're looking at locking down every penny that we can. So, but if that's something that the commission wants to pursue, it'd have to be via a motion.
I totally understand that. And we're talking about rebuilding our ridership because I'm also aware we've lost almost 90% of ridership, and we have to bring them back. So if I was in a store and I was trying to woo people back, I would offer special prices to get them in the door to get them back in. So hopefully that's what it's about, and that overall it means more people using the system. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. And you may just, we may want to hold off a bit till you see the suite of things that we may want to do exactly what you're talking about. How do we attract more riders? I'm absolutely aligned with what you're saying in terms of the attraction piece, in terms of how we do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Cavanaugh. And seeing nobody else, so I'll read the recommendation that the Transit Commission received the 2020 Q1 status report for information. And received?
Received.
Received.
Thank you. So the final item is item number 5, the launch of advertising on the Confederation line. And maybe I'll read the recommendation out first before we go to questions on this. If you want to put your hands, raise the hands. That the Transit Commission direct the General Manager of Transportation Services to commence a procurement process consistent with the city's procurement policy to identify potential revenue opportunities from advertising in stations and inside train cars on O-Train Line 1, and that staff report the findings to the Commission at the conclusion of the process expected to be in Q4 2020. So we have Councillor Brockington.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Commissioner Caricato for this motion. Anything to bring in revenues that don't come from the taxpayer and don't rely on increasing fares, I think this commission should be looking at every single option and opportunity, particularly now. One question I raised in some email correspondence with colleagues that I just want staff to tap into is, if I'm a prospective advertiser and I'm being asked to consider advertising in Ottawa's transit system, which right now is experiencing basically record low ridership, what's my incentive to enter into a relationship with OC Transpo that for OC Transpo would yield the highest possible revenue? And I'm just wondering whether this is the time to enter into those types of agreements, or do we wait until our ridership numbers are much higher and then go to the prospective advertisers and say, hey, we've got this huge market. We have them going through our stations where you're going to advertise or on the train and use our numbers to justify whatever fees we're going to ask for advertising. How do I know we're getting the best possible outcome?
Mr. Chair, that would be part of the work that we'd bring back to you. The councillor brings up an important point. I've done lots of advertising contracts in my 30 years of career, right-of-way contracts and so forth, and they're looking for how many sets of eyes for how long. That's what drives their business. You have the fortune of having, you know, as I've said many times, one of the busiest LRT lines in North America. That will be an attraction. I can tell you right now, they'll chase certain assets irrespective of the volume. They will do things, what's called station domination, where they'll take a whole station and whatever the brand is, they'll want to cover every single wall with that. And that's fine if that's where you want to go. I think the challenge in this particular period, if it was pre-COVID, we'd be able to say to them, we move about 100 million passengers a year. Right now, we're nowhere near that. What we would do is twofold in this proposal is, first and foremost, we do a sounding exercise, a confidential sounding exercise with potential bidders, asking them that question along with another a bunch of other questions. And then we would also do a future planning in terms of if the ridership goes to X, Y, and Z, what would those numbers look like? The trick here is not to lock in at low advertising dollars, but to maximize the future potential. And again, there are people in the industry that will tap into to help us shape those confidential sounding questions. We would bring all that back to you in terms of here's what the projections would look like, because they're going to look for long-term contracts. And we'll bring all those numbers back to you. This motion saves a step in terms of the study work that we wanted to do before. But absolutely, we're on the same page as how do we maximize it? What does it look like at 100 million? What does it look like in our future projections and so forth? And what does it look like with our low?
Okay, so I mean, I like the motion. I just wanted to make sure we're getting as much as we can. And colleagues, just to prepare for the meeting, I had staff print off from our 2020 budget each revenue generating line for OC Transpo. And what I did was, okay, I wanted to see what all the other revenue possibilities are. Obviously, many of them are different types of bus passes or community passes, cash fares that we have. We have very few non-transit pass or cash revenue lines, right? The options for other is so few. And so just to go back to staff, in addition to advertising, we have charters. We're going to have the rent that our retail tenants, I think it's Happy Goat. I'm not sure if that's going ahead, but some retail revenue. But is there anyone at OC Transpo trying to look at, you know, renting stations out for movies or television commercials or just really trying to think outside the box that we have these assets? How can we maximize non-transit fare revenue? So like I said, I really like the motion before us, but I don't want us to stop just with advertising. If there's anything else that we can maximize, this is the time to ask staff to do it.
Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, the short answer is we all do. And we all think innovatively. We're tapped into, you know, what other agencies are doing around the world in terms of that. Advertising can be a stream. One of the things that we were successful is being, you know, the early adopters of the UPass program. But in addition to that, UPass, everybody thinks is for universities. We're expanding that. It's called Universal. We're looking at that. We have large condo rental units that are being built around our LRT stations. I can tell you we're in active discussions with those landlords. Some of them are very intrigued to say, how do you lock in continuous year after year purchasing of bus passes and Presto cards and so forth. So we will look at everything. And if there's ideas from anybody from the Transit Commission, we're happy to look at that.
Okay. Yeah, I remember recently, Councillor Gower, you had a zoning application on one of your streets, and one of the components of the motion was, I think it was a 1 year pass to residents, which I really liked. So that was great. Colleagues, my last comment is, I'm very concerned that given that Ottawa's employment is not as diverse as other cities, we are a government town, federal government town. And if the federal government holds their workers back longer than expecting, if they're not going back in September, some might wait until 2021, our public transit system is going to be impacted further than what we're planning. And I do think there needs to be some political pressure in Ottawa to remind the federal government that even though they've been somewhat cold to help transit systems across the city with their economic challenges in Ottawa, I think that the problem is compounded even worse because we are a government town and the federal government doesn't send their workers back. Our transit system is really going to suffer and hurt because of those lack of revenues. So I know that's a lot more than what Commissioner Caricato is expecting with his motion on the floor today. But when we talk about the economic realities at council on June 24th, we have to talk about how do we get people back on the bus and on the train, because that has to contribute to our overall economic vitality going forward. So I just wanted to raise that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Brockington. Next up is Councillor Kavanaugh.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the motion. It is a revenue source. It's actually kind of livens up things to see more advertising around. It's something to look at while you're there. And when I was in England, I remember seeing in the London Tube system, all the advertising just kept me busy and sort of kept me up on what's happening there. So it's actually quite useful. I just want to remind about standards for advertising, that we be very clear about that we keep very high standards and think in terms of equity. That's my only warning about that not be forgotten. Because we've had issues in the past and we certainly wouldn't want to repeat them. But otherwise, I have no problem with seeing advertising. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Kavanaugh. Next up, Commissioner Caricato, if you want to wait to go last, we'll let you. You could do wrap up and your comments. Is that okay? All right, Commissioner Wright Gilbert.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. My questions were largely asked by Councillor Brockington, so thank you for that. My only question is this is an extra project. While I do support the motion, this is an extra project for city staff to take on during a time where we're having some issues with RTG. And so that's having to be managed. You know, there's a pandemic going on and that's having to be managed. And so I guess my question for city staff is this a project, this procurement project, something that you can realistically take on during a time where your attentions are quite divided in a couple of different directions?
Chair, I believe we can. This saves us a step. So, the time we were going to put towards doing the report in terms of the outline and the discussions you're having today, that's what that report was going to be about, validation and so forth. We won't have to do that. The procurement piece, you know, we've got a great city procurement team. We've got our finance team that can help us with the analysis. So if we need to, we'll bring in a consultant to help us on some of the framing of the questions. And I'm really enjoying what's being raised today, because those will be the difficult discussions. You know, Councillor Cavanaugh talked about advertising standards. I'm going to forewarn you, our legal team, we have been through a journey on that in the last decade about what is permitted and what is not permitted. And we're going to put that front and center to you in terms of that, because I know some councillors in the past have been stunned that we're not allowed to say no to certain advertising and so forth. So to me, that's the difficult part in that, Commissioner. And we have that expertise already built up. We did some amazing work with some precedent-setting cases in the past. So a lot of that legwork is done. If it hadn't been, I'd be worried. So we'll bring it. I can't give you the exact date, but we'll do the best we can on it.
So overall, you're supportive then of this. I mean, I know you're not. I don't think you're supposed to comment on whether you're supportive of a motion, but this project doesn't concern you or cause you to have any sort of pause when it comes to workload.
It's a swap out of the work we were going to do that we now do not have to do. So we'll substitute that for that. And if I need a consultant on the advertising, vetting some of the proponents and so forth, we'll bring in the extra resource.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. So finally, Commissioner Caricato.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate the support that I think I'm hearing across the Zoom call. But just to touch on the points that Councillor Brockington brought up, I'm with you. I agree. But I think time is money, and we need to move now on this and get the procurement process done over the slower summer months. And my hope is that as revenue is collected, it'll increase over the months and the years ahead as ridership returns to higher levels. So that was sort of the impetus for moving on this now, even though, yes, we're seeing lower ridership than before the pandemic. I agree with Councillor Cavanaugh entirely on having standards, and I'm glad to hear John mention that in his comments. And back to the alternative revenue sort of ideas that we could put forward. I remember a time when I first started working at the House of Commons, there was a program where I could opt in and purchase a monthly or a yearly pass. And I believe that was somewhat subsidized by the federal government. And so that was an extra incentive for me to want to engage in that. And perhaps we can, in our talks with the federal government, look at that as an alternative or as an additional step. The whole point here is just, before we go back to the discussion about increasing fares, I want to be able to say to riders and taxpayers, quite frankly, that we looked at every other option first. And it sounds like we are all in agreement on that. So hopefully the motion will be supported today and we can have some of those findings in the fall and quickly launch an advertising program.
Okay, thank you. John, did you want to add any more comments before we go to vote?
No, thank you, Chair. I think we're good.
Okay, thank you. All right, then. Let's see here. Is this item carried?
Carried.
Okay, carried. Thank you all.
Great.
Okay, now next. There's no in-camera items. Notice a motion. Anybody have a motion for the next meeting? Okay, no motions. Any inquiries? Okay, seeing none, we're going to the last page here. Other business. No other business. So motion to adjourn, please.
Adjourn.
Adjourn. Okay.
Thank you all. So although our next meeting is to be held on September 16th, we do have a meeting, an option to call a special meeting, as we've done this month on two occasions, to deal with any situations that arise. So until then, we are now adjourned. Thank you.